This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! It's over! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm.
And he got it, young boy!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Carter Rodriguez is not here today because apparently having a kid in the middle of a pandemic kind of chews up some of your free time. So with him out, I'm very pleased to welcome two guests from the Dishes and Dimes podcast, Iman and Kelsey. Iman, I'm going to start with you first because I'm worried about your well-being. You were tweeting about Tide Pods just a little too frequently in Game 6. How was Game 7? Are you recovered from it just yet?
Yeah, Tide Pods wear off quite quickly, actually. So, you know, I'm good. Bounce back.
It's a quick spin cycle to get over it.
Yes, it's a quick spin cycle.
Kelsey, how are you doing? How are you both recovering here from the Raptors Game 7 loss? Because that was a hell of a series, and I'm a couple of years now removed from the Cavs playing meaningful basketball, so I have a break from the anxiety. How did you experience Game 7?
I'm not disappointed. I mean, our boys gave it their best, and ultimately they just could not get it done, but they did take them to 7 games, and they did the best they could for the most part.
I mean, I completely agree. It's one of the reasons I really wanted to have you two on and to talk about the Raptors is despite what my Twitter feed would show, there has been many times this season on the podcast where I've kind of cited the Raptors as a model that a lot of teams can replicate, because Toronto's in a weird spot where they should be a glamour market. Like, you look at what the city has to offer, and it absolutely would fall in the category of a glamour market, but just because of the travel concerns and some of the preconceptions NBA players have, they haven't really been able to capitalize on that. At least when it comes to free agency. But I feel like what they've done from a team building standpoint is something that a lot of teams should kind of aspire to. When it comes to this season, obviously losing Kawhi, Iman, I'll start with you. Do you feel like there's a sense that this was kind of a missed opportunity? Because I really do feel that with this semifinals run, that was the conference finals. Like, I do not think Miami was going to beat either of these teams, and it really would have drove home just what Toronto has built if they were able to pull off that Game 7 win.
I agree with you in that I think that this was the conference finals, and I mean, I take it a little further, I called it the finals.
I like that.
And a missed opportunity. You know, my whole thing is, if they lost, Kelsey's answer was very nurturing. You can tell that she's a mother and I'm a child trapped inside a 27-year-old's body, because I look at this and I'm just like, the bubble doesn't count. We're throwing an asterisk on this. There's no missed opportunity because none of this matters.
You know what? That's not too bad. Honestly, one thing I really do appreciate about the coverage both of you provide is it feels a little more like an authentic fan experience. And I think too often what we see with media coverage is if you are covering a team. Sometimes I see people go a little too negative because then they can say, oh, I'm just being objective. Like that's their way that they can kind of cite being objective, when really when it comes to it, everybody has their biases. Like, just own up to the biases to some extent and create a fun environment, because ultimately sports really is escapism. And I think people do have a tendency to get away from that.
I agree with that. I agree with that completely. And, you know, to answer your question, I think in a more measured way, not with my crazy fan take, it's hard to take sort of either stance. Is it a missed opportunity? Sure, because there was a clear path towards the finals if you're a team in the Eastern Conference, I think. And so, yeah, it does kind of feel like a missed opportunity, but also it's hard to not look at this as a growing experience. Kyle Lowry came out with like this beautiful, there was a quote towards Pascal Siakam, who had, of course, a really tough playoffs. And if he's sort of the face of this team moving forward, he's going to take his lumps and bruises. As Raptor fans, we've seen it with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. And this kind of just feels like another sort of growing experience. Same thing with Fred VanVleet. If he remains on this Raptors team, I think this was a learning experience for him. So it's hard to see it as a missed opportunity when so much of this team's core is young. Mm-hmm. But then it's also hard to not see it as that when there's a clear path to the finals and you've got Marcus Gasol, you've got Serge Ibaka and Kyle Lowry, who are all guys 30 plus. So I don't, like, it's difficult.
Mm-hmm. Kelsey, I honestly, even now looking back at calling it a missed opportunity, I don't necessarily like that terminology, because I think you raise a good point where there is half of this team that's really young. Like Siakam, this is his first year really in this role, and he now has things that are pretty clear what he needs to work on, and there's always opportunity for growth with struggles. But then you have the other half of the team that is kind of on the back nine of their career. Kelsey, do you think that the team is mostly going to run it back next season? Do you think both Gasol and Ibaka are going to be back, or are you going to start to see a little bit of a changing of the guard when it comes to the veteran leadership?
I don't know if they'll all be back. I mean, that's kind of almost impossible. I don't see Marc Gasol coming back, just because the way that Serge played in the bubble and the way that Mark played in the bubble are kind of night and day. Mm-hmm. And the way that Serge played alongside Pascal and the way that Mark played alongside Pascal were also night and day. So if you are going forward with Pascal as your number one option, he's going to be the one you want to build around. And I just don't see that being, you know, a Marc Gasol, Pascal Siakam duo.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like the Fred VanVleet contract situation also makes it a little more difficult too, because you'd like to bring both of those guys back, but you already have a lot of money tied up in the point guard position, and I can't imagine there's any appetite for moving on from Kyle Lowry this summer. So if you're going to be paying that much to the two guards, you kind of have to free that up somewhere. And when you look at maybe Chris Boucher that's able to step up and maybe eat some of those minutes, I feel like there's an opportunity to pay Fred. You have both him and Lowry under contract next season, and you just kind of move on from some of those veterans, maybe even play smaller. Like, do you think there's a possibility that OG might end up playing more at the four and Siakam at the five? And I mean, if there's one thing we know about Nick Nurse, he's not shy to experiment.
Definitely agree with that. And my whole thing is like, yeah, well, if you're bringing Giannis, you got to kind of play one of them at the five. Got to find a way to fit in that OG Pascal Siakam Giannis front court. But I also think, I don't know that I kind of think that Marc Gasol is going to stay. And I don't know, maybe I haven't really taken a look at the sort of cap situation, but he hasn't really played himself into a big contract. He hasn't really played himself into someone trying to come in and snatch him up. Mm-hmm. I think that the Raptors can work out a short-term deal with both Serge and Mark. And I really like a combination of Marc Gasol and Fred VanVleet. So if you're looking to pay Fred VanVleet, then I think you want another... Fred VanVleet's not a great playmaker, as we saw, as Game 7 showed us. And so having a guy like Marc Gasol on the floor with him, I think it was Yasmin who said they kind of make up a Kyle Lowry together, which is, you know, a perfect way of putting it. So I think because of this weird bubble COVID scenario and no one really knowing what the cap is going to look like and no one really knowing what the future of the NBA holds, I think it kind of bodes well for this Raptors team bringing more pieces back than they otherwise would have.
Kelsey, what do you think? Because part of me thinks that Gasol's like the perfect guy that a contender would try to poach on at the mid-level exception. But on the other hand, he does seem like he's kind of found a home in Toronto and has enjoyed his time there.
Yeah, I think what Iman said is right. I mean, he didn't really play himself into this big bucks contract. So if we can get him on like a vet minimum or like a mid-level exception, that would be great. But we also have, you know, there's quite a few younger guys who are eager and ready to kind of step up. You know, you've got Chris Boucher, and then you've also got Juan Hernandez on like a two-way. So those are guys that are also ready to fill that position if it becomes available.
One thing that's impressed me with the Raptors is the way that they've kind of been able to build from the middle. And obviously with the Cavs, there's constant debate about what the best team building approach is. There's a lot of people that are uncomfortable with the notion that next year they're going to attempt to win, which you can't just say you're going to win and start making the playoffs. I've cautioned Cavs fans not to get their expectations too high because they're still relying on a lot of really young players. But I really have grown to hate the notion that you should either be first or last. The Ricky Bobby approach to team building, where if you get into the middle, you're going to be stuck there. Because I think Toronto has really kind of proven that that's not true, that you can get to the middle, you can develop more talent, you can consolidate talent to get someone like Kawhi. And then their ability to develop guys out of the G League, undrafted players, I think really sets them apart as kind of a model franchise. Kelsey, can you speak to what the 905 does differently than the rest of the G League and how the Raptors use them? Because it really does feel like nobody's doing a better job of using the G League to develop talent.
Well, the 905, I think it's the culture that they've created. They've created one that's so similar to the Toronto, you know, family first, team first culture. And we've seen with players that don't play that way. I mean, Shamori Ponds was on a two-way and they waived him and brought in Paul Watson Jr. on a two-way instead because he bought into the culture in a way that Shamori Ponds didn't. If people are coming through the G League system and they're using the Raptors 905 as kind of their own personal highlight reel, then it's never going to work out for them. And so once you have players that buy into that, I think it kind of projects upward from there.
Gotcha. So kind of continuity of system and trying to maintain accountability are kind of the keys there, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, Coach Jamma always says, you know, the goal is a championship, but the goal outside of that is to set you up for success. Mm-hmm. And if you just want to go through the G League and make $1 million in one season, then it's not the place for you.
Iman, what do you make of the attention that Siakam has got in this series? Because on the one hand, I do feel like a lot of his kind of shortcomings were exposed in the series or areas where he still has room for growth. Because Boston was really taking away his pet plays and it seemed to have disrupted his offense. But on the other hand, it does seem like his defense, especially on Tatum, was a big part of why they were staying in games. Do you think that people are being a little unfair towards him? Or does this kind of come with the territory when you're starting to build up kind of top 20, top 30 talk around yourself and the expectations that follow?
I think both can be true. And I think both are true. Pascal Siakam's defense was spectacular. You know, I say that he played 1-on-6. You can put him on anyone, including himself. So his defense was spectacular in that series. And yes, he struggled on the offensive end. And I think for Raptor fans, what we've seen is, you know, not to bring up DeMar DeRozan in every conversation I have, but we've seen star players in years past who, if they weren't bringing you anything on the offensive end, became unplayable, and that wasn't Pascal Siakam. In game six, he played the most minutes of anyone on the court and had the highest plus minus. You can say what you want about single game plus minus, but if you played 54 minutes and you're a plus 12, that means in the 4 minutes you sat, your team got destroyed, right? Like, they won by 3 points, so they lost by, what, 9 when he sat for 4 minutes. So it goes to show that he does bring value. However, he's the face of the franchise, and this is a team that was on pace to win 60 games. This is a really good team. He's the face of the team. He is the star player. He's going to get criticism if he doesn't perform, and this is kind of comes with the territory. The amount of criticism he's getting, I think, is completely unfair. The things that people are calling for are just ludicrous. He's a good player. He's still a young player. This is a guy who only picked up basketball at age 17. So it's not like he's been playing this game for a really long time. He had a phenomenal postseason last year that I think people are completely underscoring. And yeah, maybe he never is going to be the number one guy. But maybe he is. We don't know that, but we know that he was able to be the number two. So people talking about him as if he can't be anything, it's like, no, we saw him perform against the likes of Draymond Green, Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo on him for an entire playoff series and perform really well. He struggled. And when players struggle, they're going to be criticized. That's just a part of the game. The amount of criticism he's taking, I think, is a little unfair, though.
So what I feel with this Raptors team is everyone's kind of slid over one position higher than they should be. Like when you look at what Kyle Lowry did to extend this series to the 7, he was really stepping up a little out of his comfort zone. Like it's something that I've criticized him before about, where it's kind of, does he have his 17-7 game where he's getting everybody involved and doing all of the little things? Or is he having one of those games where he's getting 30 points? He has some of the top performances in Raptors elimination games. But that doesn't feel like a natural role for him. Kelsey, do you think that there is an opportunity for internal growth with Siakam maybe being able to step up to be that number one option in the future and kind of actually being ready for that role? Or is that going to be something that they're going to need to address either through the trade market or through free agency?
No, I think the things that the Raptors do differently and they can do differently going forward is not needing a set number one option. Mm-hmm. If you can put someone that complements Siakam, then you have a combination number one option. You don't need just one guy that you're going to run your entire offense through. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything, I don't think it's broken. I don't think it needs to be fixed, but it can be polished and it can be perfected.
Would it be fair to say that a step towards that might be finding a player that can kind of get his own shot a little easier in the half court? Because that's where this series really felt like it was lost, was they were missing a guy. Like, if you want to think of a role player example, kind of someone along the, in the mold of like a Lou Williams, who was with the Raptors, ironically, and was not very great in the playoffs, but somebody that can kind of
really
break.
Kind the... of you.
What's that?
That was really kind of you. Not very.
But is someone like that missing, or is there an opportunity for someone within the team to step up in that role? Because I do find one of my biggest gripes with the way team building is discussed right now is if a team isn't good enough at a certain aspect of the game, it seems like the solution is always, okay, the star either has to leave to a situation that has it, or they need to bring in another star player, where sometimes that can be addressed through role players.
I think the depth of the Raptors is, like, I don't think that there's any need to sell the farm to get someone besides Siakam. I mean, you have all these people that you can go to. Who's to say that, you know, Terrence Davis isn't going to develop into a kind of complimentary piece to Pascal Siakam? Who's to say that we're going to get Fred VanVleet to stop dribbling the life out of the ball in the near future? No, like, if these things happen, then I don't think that they need to add a new piece, but we're always welcome to new pieces with Greek heritage and a Nigerian background.
I love to bug a friend of the podcast, Ty Windisch, who does the Eurostep podcast with Giannis Talk to Toronto, because I really do feel like there's a very, very real possibility of that. But they do seem positioned to bring in somebody no matter what the case may be. Like, it's such a great free agency class. I feel like Toronto is going to be sticking around for a long time here. Do you guys both anticipate Fred being back next season?
I do. And honestly, to answer your question, just like to jump into the conversation that you guys were having before, I think my biggest thing heading into the playoffs, my biggest thing this entire year has been who's going to be that guy that can get you shots in the half court. Fred and Kyle are both under 6 feet. It's really difficult for them to do. Fred hit more mid-range shots, I think, in the playoffs than he did in the entirety of the regular season. I did not look that up, but I'm sure it's right. But I think that's kind of, I think it goes to your earlier point about you don't have to bottom out to get these guys. The Raptors remain in a competitive position. They'll continue to do that next year. And when the guy comes available, they can sort of plug and play him. For a long time, it was DeMar DeRozan, and then they upgraded that to Kawhi Leonard. So it makes sense that there's a big hole in that area right now for the team. I asked who it was going to be. Lots of people thought it was Norman Powell, which it looked like for most of the year, and it did for in overtime as well in game six. But who that person is going to be moving forward, I think, is going to be the biggest issue. And it'll continue to be the biggest issue even when Giannis Antetokounmpo comes in, because we see that he's also doesn't have much of a face-up game. He's not a wing. He's a big.
Right.
So yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see, but I think the Raptors have proven they can remain competitive and remain in a great position to pull that guy in or to draft that guy or not draft him, pick him up as an undrafted player and develop him into that guy.
I hate how good you guys are at picking up undrafted talent. It's really frustrating, especially when, from a Cavs perspective, I'm still very high on this kind of their recent picks. I do think that those guys have upside, but to consistently get high-end role players, like Terrence Davis is a quality backup. Like, that guy could be a second string for almost every single team, and he's a third, and he's behind another undrafted guy in Fred VanVleet. It really is remarkable. And the other guy, which doesn't really fit this category, but OG Anunoby, I think a lot of people open their eyes this series to just how good he is. Like, that guy is an elite defensive player, and I felt like at the time that it was a really smart gamble when Toronto drafted him, because this was a guy that was a lottery talent that had fallen because of injuries, and he's really, really blossomed. Kelsey, what do you think the ceiling for OG is as a player?
The ceiling for OG? I honestly have no idea. I mean, I don't think he'll be a Kawhi, but I don't think that it would be far off to say that he could come close to it.
That is really high praise.
OG Anunoby next Kawhi Leonard.
Well, you heard it here first. You could be the next Kawhi Leonard. And you never know. Surprising players can come out of nowhere, and they can fill in roles.
And if you're looking for someone to fill in roles for your company, Indeed has you covered. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th. Podcast is also brought to you by our friends at BetOnline. The wait is over. Football is finally back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure that you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, getting back to the Raptors-Celtics series, I'm curious to get your thoughts on the series Nick Nurse had, because I felt like there were times where there were some growing pains for him, which I think people can forget, even though he's coach of the year, and I think he 100% deserved that. You can have bad games as a coach. You can have a bad series as a coach. And I don't think he necessarily had a bad series, but there were quite a few questionable moments. One that stands out, game two, not calling a timeout to draw up a play at the end of the game and having Fred go full court. The isolation from Norm, which seemed a little bit questionable. Luckily, they got that in OT. Kelsey, do you feel like Nurse had a bad series, or was it just kind of confined to a few moments?
I wouldn't say it was a bad series, but it wasn't a particularly good one. It's not one you would expect from the coach of the year and the coach of the previous reigning champions. I mean, he had plenty of opportunity to pull Siakam out and put someone else in, even just if it was to give his head a shake. Mm-hmm. And he didn't do that. And I think there could have been some, you know, game swinging opportunities to do that, and he kind of just didn't. And like you said, you know, the Norm ISO, Norman Powell plays best in transition and not really allowing, I think he had like two transition baskets or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
And if you're going to play Norm, you need to put Norm in a position to succeed. And he didn't really do that. He kind of just threw him out there, and it was like, okay, do what you have to do. But there was nothing that he really could do. So there were a lot of missed opportunities from Nick Nurse, and a lot of just the same stubbornness that we saw, you know, in coaches past, of just outright refusal to deviate from his original game plan.
Yeah, I think it's easy to say it at home, oh, well, so-and-so should get benched. Like, let's say when Gasol was struggling, you should yank him. But when you're working every day with these guys and they've gotten you to the final destination and won a championship with you, it's probably a much, much more difficult decision than we give it credit for. There's so many dynamics there. Mon, what do you think of Nurse's series?
I thought he got better as the series went on. I think there were lots to complain about in the first couple of games, especially. One of the things about Nick Nurse is we call him the mad scientist, and we talk about the difference. And it's predominantly defense-based, just how versatile the team's defense is and the different things that they can run. But what we saw was a really sort of stagnant offense. The Raptors are not a really good – the Raptors are just bad in half-court offense. I think it's fine to say that. They're not a really good they just don't have that guy. We talked about that a little bit earlier. And the Celtics are one of the best transition defenses in the league. And so it was really clear that the Raptors just could not score against the Celtics in transition, which takes away a lot of points. And what we saw was a lot of Pascal Siakam post-ups that failed. And it's like, yeah, maybe you can't post up Semi Ojeleye. Maybe you can't post up Marcus Smart. This isn't like rocket science. I think just like watching it one time, you're like, oh, these guys are built really big. It's the same thing that we get. We get so excited when we see guys try to post up Kyle Lowry, because we're like, they're not, it's not going to work. Why would it work against Marcus Smart, who's like Lowry just overgrown? So like it just didn't make sense to me. Jaylen Brown did a really good job. And I thought when Pascal Siakam took it deep into the post, he was able to score a couple over him a couple of times. But what we saw was just lack of versatility in the offense. And I kind of like that Kelsey kept mentioning Norman Powell, because my whole thing was like, Norm is also this team's best cutter. Play him more with the starters. He is the only sort of wing guy that can create for himself that's not under 6 feet tall. I thought that he should have played a little bit more with the starters. I thought it would have helped a little bit more. And I just thought that the Raptors were going to, especially on the offensive end more so than the defensive end, stuff that was not working And it wasn't until I thought game three that I was like, okay, I felt like Nick entered his bag a little bit more.
I honestly thought 3, 4, 5 was going to go the Raptors' way, and then that they'd win it in 7. Like, I after game three, I agree. I felt like they were a little more in control. It would have absolutely sucked for them to lose game three, which obviously came really, really damn close, because that was one of those, okay, we kind of got over the hump. It reminded me, honestly, of game three that the Cavs had against the Warriors in 2017, where unfortunately it didn't go their way. Kyle Korver missed a wide open corner three, and then Durant had his big shot over LeBron, and it was, okay, well, we just kind of lost the series when we were kind of figuring things out. I really thought Norman Powell was going to be better in this series. He certainly had his moments, but playoff Norm has been so consistent for the Raptors. I had drafted him in our playoff pool that we have for the chase down. Does he have another gear in him? Is there more out of Norman Powell, or is this kind of where he's at? The 17 point per game, 3-and-D kind of consistent starting option.
I think consistency is the most that you can ask for Norman Powell. And we saw that before the bubble, was a consistent Norm. And if we get that moving forward, I think you have a great Norm, and it's not necessarily looking for more. He's not going to be a superstar. He shouldn't be your team's number one or number two option on offense, in my opinion, but he can get you points. He can come off the bench and be a sixth man, or he can be your fifth starter. And great three-point shooter, great cutter, Kelsey mentioned, scores amazingly in transition, just incredibly athletic, can play decent defense. So I think as long as it's consistent with Norman Powell, you're happy. But I don't know that we're looking for him to really reach the next level or hit the next stage. I think that's just consistency.
Gotcha.
Norm would be perfect off the bench in Phoenix.
Oh, that's, yeah. If I'm you two, I'm not rooting for that, but that would definitely be a good situation. Honestly, I feel like he would fit in almost any situation. I feel like 3-and-D wings in the NBA, everyone's like, oh, they should just go out and get a 3-and-D wing. There's almost none of them. It's so hard to find consistency at that position. And he's one of those guys where he doesn't necessarily have great height, but he has length. Like, you don't play defense with the top of your forehead. You do it with your arms and your body. And he has a really, really good sense of where to be on defense. You don't really see him blowing any rotations. And I really felt in game seven, the one thing, if I'm playing armchair coach, is I would have liked to see more of him in Serge, because I really felt when Ibaka was out there in that game specifically, with Powell, they had a little bit more room to roam around. The defense was respecting Serge a little bit more, and Norm's ability to cut was really opening things up for Toronto.
Yeah, I agree. I blocked out most of Game 7, though, so if you bring up another thing about Game 7, I'm probably not going to remember it.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
How about we celebrate something that did go Toronto's way, which was not hiring Mike Budenholzer? How glad are you guys that you dodged that bullet?
Oh, so glad. And I was tweeting this out the other day, where I'm like, the Raptors also wanted to get Phil Jackson and then ended up with Masai Ujiri. The Raptors wanted to get Steve Nash and then ended up with Kyle Lowry. Like, don't go for the thing that you want, Toronto. You're dumb. Just go for the thing that you get. You're lucky. but like, that's really how things have played. Like, Mike Budenholzer was the name. Phil Jackson was the name. And Steve Nash was the name. And can you imagine where this team would be if any of those things had come true?
It's funny how much luck really plays into team building. Like, no matter how good your process is, no matter how smart your front office is, sometimes you need lucky breaks along the way. Like, listeners of this podcast are going to roll their eyes because I bring up this example all the time, but the Warriors tried to trade Steph and Klay together for Chris Paul, and Chris Paul didn't want to go to Golden State. They wanted to sign Dwight Howard and had to go with their plan B and Andre Iguodala. And Toronto's a great example of that as well. Like, Masai's even admitted to it, where he thought when they were doing the Rudy Gay trade, it's okay, we're going to tear things down and rebuild. And the chemistry just clicked. Kyle Lowry stepped up to another gear at that point. And the rest is history for this team. And now they're looked at as, I think, one of the more consistent organizations around the league. Do you guys feel like Toronto still gets shortchanged when it comes to kind of respect around NBA media, or do you think it's getting to a more even place?
I do. I think my biggest gripe is always the Kyle Lowry get shortchanged. And so to see this sort of playoff run, and all of the love that he got after game six, I was like, finally, these people are seeing what I've been talking about. Just because,
Some people criticize Kyle Lowry? I don't know if I've ever seen that.
You know, check out at Cav Xanada on Twitter. You'll just search up his name and Kyle Lowry. You'll see some stuff, I'm sure. It to me, it's always been about, I think my biggest gripe has always been about Kyle Lowry, just because the Raptors have been like a 50 plus win team for 5-6-ish years at this point. 48, I think 49, the first two that they were good, and then 50 plus since. And like, that was unheard of for the Toronto Raptors. And I think you look at any team that's been a consistent 50 plus win team in their conference for as long as they have, the best player on that team, and Kyle's been the best player on this Raptors team the entire time, except for Kawhi Leonard, would get a lot more love and respect and praise than Kyle Lowry does. And so that's always been my biggest frustration. The team itself, I think that some of the looking over of the Toronto Raptors was fair, just because of how they performed against the Cavs in the playoffs year in and year out. Mm-hmm. It was very clear that, like, it's very similar to how I saw the Denver Nuggets heading into this year, which maybe was wrong on my part. I don't know how the game's going right now. It was just like, okay, yeah, they're good, they're winning, but I don't expect them to do anything in the playoffs. And I think because that was a Toronto Raptors for a long time, it made sense that they were being disrespected, quote unquote disrespected, in that way. But Kyle deserves more love, always.
Kelsey, what do you think?
I agree with the Kyle point. I mean, the thing that bothers me is that whenever someone in Toronto is doing something really well, people are really quick to either trade them or ship them off somewhere. Mm. Like, Masai won a championship, and 5 minutes later, he's going to the Wizards.
And the Knicks, and a million other teams, yeah.
And, you know, we throw Kyle Lowry into every single trade, and every time he pops back up, like, rising from the dead, like, no, I'm still here.
Yeah. And
he's so much more than just, like, a trade chip.
Mm-hmm.
We're still waiting on apologies for everyone who wanted Mike Conley on the Raptors last year to take them to the chip. Still waiting on the Lowry apologies, everybody.
You know what? I'll own up to that one, because I was in that camp. I don't know if they would have got past Philly. Like, I feel like they would have won the Milwaukee and Golden State series with Conley, because he was still playing good. He hadn't completely fallen off. But that Philly series was really damn close. I don't know if they would have got that one. So I'll own up to that. My biggest thing with Lowry is I feel like from 2017 on, the playoff choking narrative shouldn't have applied. Like, he's overcome those hurdles.
What about 2016? I'm sorry to be the Kyle Lowry. 2016 was great.
2016, he was good against the Cavs. I thought he wasn't as good prior to that.
His two best playoff games in general, mm-hmm. Maybe like two of his top 10 playoff games, I think, happened that year. Like, he had the game 7 against the Heat.
Yeah.
Where that was one of his best games, if not his best game. And then he had the game 4 against the Cavs that year, which was really good. And he had a couple in there that were good.
Yeah, I definitely feel he's overcome that. It's just, to me, the bar was raised by him. He elevated his play and had proven that he could do it in the playoffs. And then when he starts getting compared to, let's say, players like Chris Paul and other superstars, it's okay, now all of a sudden it's a different banner. It's not enough for you to have a positive impact on the game and be a plus. Because I think even when he was struggling with his shooting, he was still a plus in those games. It was, okay, if you're going to be compared to top 10 players and enter into that conversation, if the team needs a little bit more, if they need 35 points from you, I just felt like sometimes there was missed opportunities there where there wasn't like the Donovan Mitchell series like we just saw where he's putting up 35, 40 points a game in a losing effort. And it may not be fair, but that was something that had always kind of stuck out to me. But this series overall, I do feel like he did kind of go out swinging. Like he was the reason they went out in seven. I think he could have been a little bit better in game seven, but he's an older player coming off double OT playing two nights later. Like it's pretty understandable for him not to have the best shooting game in game seven.
And I mean, do you remember when I think Tom Brady lost the Super Bowl and Giselle was like, my husband cannot throw and catch the ball. That's how I feel about Kyle Lowry. He cannot make everyone on the floor better while also giving you 40 points a night. Like
yeah. I mean, it's not an easy thing. There's very, very few players that can do that. And maybe it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where it's just, okay, it's Kyle Lowry is a second or third option. I don't know if there's anybody better. Like when you're talking about his role playing off of Kawhi, and I had actually said this, I believe in a conversation with Matt Moore early in the series, playing off someone like Kawhi, I don't know if there's a better guard that you can have because he does have a very good sense for getting everybody else involved. He's not going to overstep and take away from that primary option. It's just finding a guy that can fill in that role. Before we wrap this up, though, I want to get thoughts from both of you on what you would like to see from Toronto this offseason. I know you're going to be preserving cap space for the free agents in I guess next offseason. I keep saying summer when I mean offseason, but I guess that's going to happen this winter. What do you guys want to see this winter from the Raptors before we see them play again in like February or March or wherever next season starts?
I think Fred is priority number one for the team. As much as I've come at him, I think he's still a great shooting guard, and the Raptors should really look to keep him. Can be a great point guard once they get that Nigerian guy from Milwaukee. But I think that's priority number one. But I think, yeah, I think the Raptors just want to make sure that the books are open. I don't know that you want to. Hopefully, you're keeping either one of Mark or Serge on short-term deals. But to me, I don't particularly know, just because everything can be up. Like, I don't know what do you even do? I think every team is probably going to look to do short-term deals, not look to spend a lot of money. I think this is going to be a really kind of tough market for the free agents out there right now. And hopefully for the Raptors, they can bring back as much as humanly possible without taking into that 2021 cap space.
Kelsey, what do you want to see from them?
No, I agree completely. I mean, reserving cap space for a year when there are more desirable free agents is probably priority number one.
And so no going all in on Andre Drummond is what you guys are saying.
I mean,
where's that like clip of Masai Ujiri being like, yo, it's Valanciunas, you're better than Andre Drummond.
Oh man, I remember that. Sorry to cut you off, Kelsey, continue.
No, that's okay. I'm not gonna go all in on Andre Drummond. But yeah, just keep the books clean for 2021. Let Pascal develop. Let your bench guys develop, because I mean, this isn't Benjamin Button. You know, your starters aren't getting any younger, and if this team is this successful already, keeping them together and giving them opportunity to grow so that you don't have to kind of rebuild around trying to get one franchise star.
I think that's fair. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they continue to balance the approach. As I said before, I think they've done a really good job of kind of having two teams where you're developing the young guys and while also having veterans there and maintaining flexibility. And that should be a thing that any team that doesn't just get bailed out by stars going there, cough, cough, LA. I think that's something that a lot of those teams can aspire to.
I think Cough Cough LA should also aspire to it, because my whole thing is like, okay, yeah, you got your two superstars, but who is your third best player? And think about how poor they've been for the last 6 years. You guys couldn't, if you guys spent like a little bit of time developing some of those young guys, doing a little, taking a few notes from the Masai Ujiri Toronto Raptors, you guys might actually field a team 3 through 15 that, you know, can help LeBron James and Anthony Davis in the playoffs. But
you know what? I was actually hating more on the Clippers right now, because I can't stand anything that they stand for. Like, the Lakers are always going to be the Lakers. It doesn't matter if they have a bad process. They're just going to get stars. And who knows? Maybe they'll be the team that poaches away Marc Gasol on a mid-level exception or something frustrating like that.
It's going to be the same Danny Green scenario. Like, Danny Green was miserable for the Raptors in the playoffs last year too, then went to LA and that continued. I feel like that's just going to happen with Marc Gasol.
Well, now that the Rockets are out, basically the only team I don't want to see win is the Clippers. Do you guys have the same spite in your heart, or is there a team that you guys are rooting for as the season concludes?
If I could build a Lawrence Frank dartboard, I would. So I'm with you.
Kelsey, what about you?
I mean, I would like the Heat to take it all. It's not going to happen. But if I have to choose between the Clippers and the Lakers, I'm sorry, I'm choosing the Clippers.
Eesh. Personally, I'm kind of okay with seeing the Lakers win. I wouldn't mind LeBron getting another title. It is nice. Now that he's not on the Cavs, I don't feel the need to fight over his legacy anymore. I can just kind of have my opinion and be like, you know, if you disagree, you disagree. It's no big deal. I don't know about you guys. It's you just lost to them. But Boston, it frustrates me because I really like the majority of the players on the team. It's just the name on the front of the jersey that really drives me nuts.
Very that. Everyone on that team outside of Gordon Hayward is so likable.
Wait, Marcus Smart?
Yeah. I mean, okay. You hate on Marcus Smart when you're playing against him, but when he's on your team, he's just like Patrick Beverley. You're like, I love him.
Yeah. I'm in that boat. I just thought the wound would be a little fresh of seeing that much Marcus Smart. Seven games that maybe you wouldn't like him at the moment.
I don't have any hate in my heart for Marcus Smart.
That's fair. You know, that's a very mature way to handle that.
He's going to get his ass beat by Miami anyway, so I'm not going to hold on to any hatred.
I don't know about that. I think I'm picking Boston in 5 or 6 next series. I think they're going to handle them. But it will be very interesting, and it'll be interesting to see what happens this winter. I mean, has it sunk in for you guys that there might be no Raptors until February or March?
No, it's the most depressing thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. Try not playing since March. Like, even though the Cavs never win, it's really getting to the point where I'm like now actually getting frustrated by it, where it's going
but
to be
I feel like it would be like joyous to not have to watch the Cavs.
No, I enjoy it. I there's something wrong with me. There's a lot wrong with me, to be honest, but it does drive me nuts, especially because when you're a really bad team and a really young team, that post all-star break stretch where teams stop taking you seriously and you put up a bunch of numbers because no one's trying, that's where you get the hope from, and we got robbed of that. But hopefully at some point in the future, we'll get another Cavs-Raptors series. That would be a lot of fun, even though it might be a little more difficult without LeBron around, that's for sure. But I really do appreciate both of you guys coming on. Really, really appreciate it. For all our listeners, make sure you guys are checking out the Dishes and Dimes podcast. Do you guys have anything else you'd want to plug before I wrap this up?
I don't think so.
Alrighty, well, let's wrap it up there. Make sure you're supporting them. Check out the Patreon. And if you're not going Patreon, support them the way you support us, which is by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. A reminder that if you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we will send you a link there. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. We really appreciate all the support. And until next time, go Cavs.